Welcome back to Wherever You May Be, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. Today, I'm once again joined by Krish. Krish, I feel like last time when I asked you how you're feeling, I already knew the answer. And I feel like I know the answer this time when I ask you, but it's a much more positive, happy feeling. Am I right?
Yeah, much, much better. It's a perfect tonic, isn't it? Winning a London derby, especially against Tottenham in the modern era, I think. Yeah, infinitely better than last week, and we've spoken about it before, but I think this little break has come at a good time as well. But yeah.
Let's get into the Tottenham game, because when we played them in that semi-final League Cup, I think, like we said, possibly one of the easiest semi-finals Chelsea will ever play. Now, after their last-minute heroics against Leicester and Chelsea's disappointing draw against Brighton, I was expecting Spurs to come at us and to just put pressure on us. But again, they made it so easy for us, didn't they?
Yeah, it was after they beat Leicester, especially in the last minute, and that, the way they won that game, I was expecting them to be so much more positive, I think, is like the key word. Two banks of fullbacks on both wings. It was just so, so negative. And I think from the first minute, we were right at them, clearly had the more intent and kind of more attacking energy and willingness to kind of attempt to get in behind them. And then they clearly set up in a system where they were going to try and hit us in the break. And yeah. I mean, they almost did, I suppose, but we dealt with them, and it was it was a continuation of those two games, really, wasn't it? I thought it was just pretty comfortable ultimately. It was kind of tense being there. I don't know if you felt that, but it felt important. But yeah, it always actually, especially at halftime, sort of felt like we had enough to get the job done, and then that is what happened.
Yeah, like you said, we nearly did go behind, which I think it would have been undeserved. I think that's fair to say, if they hadn't gone 1-0 up. Now, this has been quite a controversial topic, Thiago Silva and the push on him by Harry Kane. I can agree it's probably soft, but do you not think Harry Kane has got to be a little bit more subtle about it if he's going to go and push someone in the back in the box? Having your arm outstretched like that, once you look back at it, you think, well, yeah, it's a push, surely.
Yeah, it's one of those ones, isn't it? If he'd used two hands, he would say that's 100% a foul. I think I more or less agreed with what Jermaine Gina said on Match of the Day. He said that Kane basically didn't need to do it. It is soft, but Thiago Silva's smart and completely within his rights to go down. I think that is the key point at the end of the day. He has shoved him in the back. If you watch it at full pace as well, like,
yeah,
as much as Thiago goes down easily, that is pretty hard to stay upright if you're kind of stopping yourself and then someone sort of runs into the back of you. When I was there, I wasn't even sure they were checking on VAR. I don't know if they did.
Well, they did. I think they did, because I think the ref waited for the ball to go in the back of the net before he blew his whistle. Now, if he blows his whistle before the ball goes in the net, VAR can't do anything about it. So what I think is that he was going to wait and see what happened. The ball got put in the back of the net, so he blew the whistle, gave the free kick, and then obviously that way VAR can intervene if they want. But yeah, that's not a clear and obvious, like, I mean, that, I don't think that was ever going to be overturned.
No, not at all. I think you, I saw your tweet saying if you support the other club, you're screaming for
yeah.
That's it, the end of the day, isn't it?
Every single, that's what wound me up, is that, you know, obviously Spurs fans feel hard done by. But if that's down the other end, and that's, you know, Romelu Lukaku pushing Eric Dier, they're saying, of course it's a foul, and of course it's not a goal. So I think,
yeah,
I think
playing devil's advocate. So my mate, who is a big Spurs fan, he said, so obviously, yeah, he was on the side of things saying it was soft. He reckons that if that wasn't at Stamford Bridge, that's a goal. What do you reckon?
Do you know what? I hate stuff like that. Like, no, that's just a foul. And I'm pretty sure wherever that game is being played, you know, Harry Kane wasn't subtle about it. You know, it was an outstretched arm into Thiago Silva's back. So any ref looking at that is probably going to think that's a foul. So no, I don't agree with that. Everyone's talking like we get loads of decisions at Stamford Bridge. I don't even think that's true. But it was a man of the match winning performance. And I feel like, no disrespect to Ziyech, but I feel like we've been waiting 2 years for this moment, and it's taken far too long than it should have. But we finally saw a performance from Hakim Ziyech that had absolutely everything. You know, His passing was brilliant. His balls into the box were brilliant. He was winning the ball back. He won the ball back most times out of anyone on the pitch. His attitude was brilliant. And we saw a smile after one of the goals of the season. It was unbelievable performance from him, wasn't it?
Yeah, like absolutely perfect all-round performance. As you say, yeah, we've been waiting for that. I think I'm probably guilty of this as well. Like maybe a lot of us have convinced ourselves that Ziyech is something that he isn't. Obviously, in that Champions League campaign where he kind of had that rise to fame, basically, the performance in that performances therein were like so consistent that maybe that is what we came to expect. But yeah, whether that was realistic, I don't know. And obviously, he was playing in the Dutch league. It's just as a fact, not to the same standard, but. Yeah, that is the frustrating thing with Sunday, is that he absolutely showed that he is capable of playing like that when he wants to, when he's in the mood to. Like, literally, the first thing he did was just ridiculous footwork, and he had that shot, which Lloris saved before half-time. But his technique is absolutely unbelievable, and he was spraying passes about, which he's sort of become known for. There's all those, like, stadium videos, and like, fan videos on social media, always, like, right behind his cross. But yeah, I was fortunate enough in the press box to be like right behind some of his like pinged crosses, the one that Lukaku should maybe got the end on of, and I was behind his goal looking the other way as well. Like, absolutely unbelievable strike. And yeah, it makes me think maybe he's like a confidence player, and I don't know if he'd just been lacking it. Obviously, he doesn't play every single game. There's all these like other factors, but you can see why Tuchel started in two games in a row when other players were available. Can you, like, he's clearly seen something in him in training. And the work rate, as you say, was like the unbelievably impressive thing, I thought. Like, he's tracking back. It was ridiculous.
And I think, like you said there, it is fair play to Thomas Tuchel, because I know on Twitter, and I know obviously you shouldn't base every opinion on Twitter, but obviously a large following of every football team like puts their opinions on Twitter. And a lot of people were saying that, you know, Hakim Ziyech shouldn't have started against Brighton, even though he scored that goal against Brighton, that perhaps he shouldn't have started against Spurs. And fair play to Thomas Tuchel and fair play to Hakim Ziyech, but I'm just hoping now that we're going to see that level, you know, once everyone's had a rest, like you said, a much needed break, that we can see Hakim Ziyech hopefully get to another level. But having said that, Chris, the problem is we've got so many attackers, that is Thomas Tuchel going to stick with Lukaku? And, you know, those two positions are almost up for grabs. Those three positions, maybe we're playing at four at the back. So it's a difficult one with Ziyech, isn't it?
That's true, yeah. I think he pretty much, I feel like he has to give Timo Werner a chance at some point, because obviously Timo Werner isn't out of the team on merit, really. He's just injury and COVID and stuff. But when he has come off the bench, as much as I love him, I'm not sure he's going to be the option. I would like to see Havertz play more, and I enjoyed the fact that we played four at the back. I thought we, again, looked comfortable doing it, just like we did in the first leg of the Carabao Cup semi. But yeah, I would like Ziyech to, like, now, I mean, obviously a lot of time will pass between now and our next game, and he will rotate anyway for Plymouth. But yeah, next time we have a Premier League match, or because even at the Club World Cup, he'll rotate, won't he? So
yeah,
it's a long way away, to be fair, our next Premier League match. But you would, if Ziyech can kind of carry on some of that form through these games, and there's no reason why he can't, then you'd like to see him given the chance. But I would personally like to see Havertz especially brought back in. I think he has something to add, and again, has been seriously disrupted by injuries and stuff, and I think coming back in. But yeah, I agree. I personally thought Lukaku, I don't know what you thought, I thought he played pretty well. I think he should have scored, but I actually thought it was a decent centre-forward performance.
I thought it was much better in the second half. You know, I thought he was doing... In the first half, I was like, yeah, he's been all right. Like, I wouldn't say he's been particularly bad. I think he's been okay. Had a couple of chances where he tested Lloris. But I think in the second half, you know, he was doing the stuff that we know he can do, hold the ball up, bringing others into play, making those runs into the box. And I thought we had a really good game. But you talk about you want Havertz to get a chance. Does that mean in place of Romelu Lukaku? Or does that mean as well as Romelu Lukaku? Because it's difficult. Havertz as a false nine is where we've sort of seen him.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. I guess it depends now if he sticks with this different shape which did work. I mean, I was really impressed with Malang Sarr at left back as well, which kind of gives us another option. I don't know what tells me that he's not going to stick with it, but something tells me he's not going to stick with it.
I mean, it's because we played so well in the first leg of the Carabao Cup as a four, and then he just went in the game after and the game after that. But the second leg went back to a three. So, but I feel like that formation without Ben Chilwell and Reece James is the perfect formation, because, you know, you've got Sarr that can play left back, or you've got Alonso that can play left back. Azpilicueta is a much better right back than he is right wing back. Mm-hmm. So I think without those players, without those two key wing backs, revert into a four. And we've shown that Rudiger and Thiago Silva can play in a four.
Yeah, Rudiger and Preston as well. Thiago Silva obviously can. Yeah, I think that was what was reassuring. Obviously, with Azpilicueta, I mean, he did well to get forward, but with Sarr, they still sort of remain as a three, and then Azpilicueta is the one getting forward. So it's still a nice defensive shape. And Jorginho and Kovacic were both really, really good on Sunday too, especially Jorginho. I thought he kind of picked up pockets of pace and played forward really, really well. And Tottenham couldn't get a grip on him at all. But yeah, it's a good point about who... So what did he call it? A 4-1-4-1 or something? And then mounts in midfield, technically.
Although, I don't really know what position it is, to be honest. But.
Yeah. So there is the issue of like where you fit Havertz into that, I suppose, if that is the shape it sticks with. I would like to see Havertz as like, maybe an attacking mid behind Lukaku.
Yeah.
But again, Callum Hudson-Odoi was excellent, and so he doesn't deserve to lose his place on that by that token. So it's a good selection dilemma to have, I suppose, but it does feel, to me personally, feel like I just want Havertz to succeed so desperately, I think, that I really would like to see him back in the team and sort of doing this, but where he can fit in remains to be seen.
I'm sure Thomas Tuchel has a plan. You mentioned Hudson-Odoi there. I was really impressed with his performance. I thought he had Tanganga sort of on strings. What annoyed me was he didn't go at him a little bit more. Once he'd got that first yellow card, you know, that's the perfect opportunity to go at someone, because they can't touch you. For the goal, he did absolutely brilliantly on the left-hand side, and he got in front of Tanganga, and he knows that he can't touch him because he's on a yellow card, and he set up the goal, and, you know, he had a chance in the first half, I think, when the Lukaku sort of swung and missed. And I just wanted a little bit more quick thinking from Hudson-Odoi there. You know, take a shot straight away. Take it onto your left. I literally saw Thomas Tuchel screaming at him to be like, take it on your left foot. You know, that's where the space is. He always wants to cut inside. But it was a very positive performance from him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think, again, he's sort of a confidence player as well. But he definitely grew in confidence from minute one. As you say, yeah, he got drew a foul and got Tanganga booked. And then there was a really similar one. The referee somehow missed it not long after, but Tanganga had a hold of him again. It was just a bit more subtle because they were kind of running alongside each other, so he was able to grip him like down by his foot. So he wasn't like, you know, when he's like stretched his shirt. If you stretch the shirt, then you can like clearly see him pulling him back. But it was a more subtle one. But the assist was unreal. Like from the halfway line, rolling Tanganga like he did. Quality.
Really, really good. I want to get on to, so after the Brighton game, Chris, everyone was talking about Hakim Ziyech's celebration and that there wasn't much of a celebration. And it's funny, now that we've beaten Spurs, no one seems to be talking about this dressing room unrest or dressing room trouble or whatever. I actually think, when I thought about it, I thought Hakim Ziyech isn't one for a big celebration. Even when he was at Ajax, he loved just doing the...
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like he does that a lot, and he did when he scored for Ajax at Stamford Bridge. He literally just turned to the crowd and was like that. He did it against Brighton, and he did it again against Spurs. Albeit he had a little more of a smile on his face against Spurs, but I just don't think he's that sort of player with a big celebration. Were people reading way too much into this dressing room unrest, or do you think there's something in it?
I think so. Yeah. So he looked genuinely sort of almost emotional and overjoyed to score that goal that he did score. I think a lot of his demeanour comes with frustration with his own game. But obviously this stuff today has come out that some of Chelsea's attacking players are unhappy because of how harsh Tuchel is in training and on the pitch in terms of how much he kind of shouts at them if they miss a chance or if they make a mistake, like Hudson-Odoi. So The Athletic reported that today, basically, and they went as far to say as to say that some of Chelsea's attacking players are thinking about leaving because they don't like it. But then it's also countered by the fact that Ziyech in the past has said that he likes working with Tuchel and Tuchel has the right sort of relationship with the players. And Mason Mount has said similar things, that he is harsh on the touchline, but then in off the pitch, away from the pitch, he's apparently a really chilled out guy. So it's just whether or not anything's in that. But my thought on that is that at this, when it always seems to happen to Chelsea, but when things aren't going particularly well, these things come out and it looks worse than it actually is, you know what I mean? And you can see that the players are happy, the players are enjoying, I mean, certainly winning. I don't think any, I mean, obviously, no footballer enjoys bad results, and your demeanour does change if your results are going worse. And I think that was what the case was for Zia. I think it's been frustrating, but I think results have to be a lot worse for things to be seriously bad. And they've worked with Tuchel for a year now, like a year to the day, and they now know like what to expect of him. And I can't believe that's been that different kind of in the last month compared to what it was before. But
I'm hoping now that little period's out the way, this break will do us good. And it's a real difficult situation for Tuchel in terms of like team selection, because you can probably imagine that the players that aren't getting picked are those ones that the Athletic are reporting about, because the Athletic usually are spot on, aren't they, when they do come out and say stuff. So I wonder who those players are and if it's true or whatever. But I think it's nice that, you know, we got that win and no one seems to be talking about it again. So hopefully that carries on after this little break. January transfer window, there's only 5 days to go until it closes. It looks unlikely, Chris, that Chelsea are going to sign anyone. I think the left back position was the one, the left wing back position was perhaps the one that Chelsea were looking after, obviously wanted to recall Emerson. What do you make of that? Do you think the switch to the four at the back might actually mean maybe we don't need anyone in that position anymore?
Yeah, I guess we sort of touched on that. So if he feels that Malang-Sarr is like a capable option in the back four, which he seemed to be based on Sunday's evidence, and obviously we still have Marcus Alonso, he can play left back or left wing back. Those are decent options. Considering some of the scale of the games we could have between now and the end of the season, especially in the Champions League, does concern me a little bit, but they are capable, and if Tuchel trusts them, then they are trustworthy. I think it's going to take some clever formations and instructions to ensure we kind of get the best out of everyone, but it's not ideal. It's a bit thin, but I think they are probably the players to handle it. I don't know what you reckon.
Yeah, I think we did need a left wing back. I think Reece James is going to be potentially might be back for our next Premier League game, which is so exciting. I know it's literally it's like 3 weeks to a month away, but that's obviously very, very, very good news. If we could have got Emerson back, then maybe that would have been an option. But honestly, what I'm seeing from Malang-Sarr has been brilliant. I know I was a little bit worried when I watched him in that first game, League Cup game against Aston Villa. I was a bit like, oh, I don't know, but since then, he's been absolutely brilliant. And, you know, there are obviously much bigger tests than that Spurs side we faced and stuff like that. But so far, so good. And obviously, when you get to the last stages of the Champions League and stuff, that's when you want sort of your elite players back. But there's nothing we can do about it. I'm not going to sit here and overreact and be like, our season's over because we've got Marcus Alonso and Malang-Sarr at left back. It's one position. And I think we've got more of an issue in the sort of centre-back sort of situation. Obviously, that's nothing to worry about right now, but in 4 months' time, that is something to worry about with Cesar Azpilicueta, Andreas Christensen and Rudiger's contract all running out at the end of the year. Now, it looks maybe increasingly likely that Azpilicueta's going to go and Christensen, I would say now. Rudiger's the one that I think is most likely to stay. Would you agree on that? And do you think that's also the best one out of the three to stay?
So, I definitely think he's emerged as the most important out of those three, like just given his profile generally now, like age, just how good he is in our system. What I've been told, like through work, is that that Rudy is actually like not closer necessarily to signing. I think there had been some reports saying that he was still open to it. I think he probably still is.
Yeah.
But I don't think we would know if Chelsea had come close to matching his offer. I think his demands are quite simple. I think that's why he wasn't punished like Christensen was, because I think Christensen and his agent changed and then the goalposts started moving.
I think we basically offered Christensen what he wanted and then they've gone back and gone, actually, we want this and that. But I think the problem is with Rudiger is he wants so much money. And I think, understandable, you know, he's been one of Chelsea's best players. So you can understand why he wants that. But also, Bayern Munich have also pulled out. Real Madrid have now pulled out. People aren't going to pay those wages. Now, the only place he's going to get them are PSG. So if you want to go and play around in the French league, which is useless, then do that, be my guest. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Compared to the Premier League and what he's playing in now.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's the thing. I think he knows the fans love him, he knows the manager loves him, he knows how important he is, and that we can win literally the biggest trophies there are to win. I think, all being well, next season, as long as we steer clear of the injuries and COVID stuff, like, we'll be right up there next season. So he knows that he's probably in the best possible place. I agree. The Chelsea saving grace could be the fact that Bayern and Real Madrid just can't or don't want to afford him anyway, because they've got other priorities as well. Obviously, Real Madrid, especially in terms of how much money they're about to spend on strikers or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully that's what happens and he's left with no option but to stay. But certainly, I agree, he's probably the most important player. But I still think, as Piliqueta, I understand, I think, like, he's at a certain age where he's obviously served us for a decade this year, hasn't he? And nice round number to kind of finish his time with us. And he's obviously much, much older. But Christensen, you know, he's 25, he's not even at his peak yet, and he's been excellent both at club and international level this year. So to lose a player like that who's come through the academy would be a bit of a blow. And I imagine his wages are significantly lower than Rudiger's, his demands are. So that would be, I mean, yeah, both would be a big, big blow.
Yeah. I think we'll have to wait and see on that one. I think it would be, you know, to lose all three at that one time. I think Jules Koundé was linked, and that's still a deal that could potentially happen. And Trevor Chalobah's there. Thiago Silva's obviously there as well for another year. Thank God I couldn't love that man anymore, honestly. I think I tweet about him every single game. I'm literally, I just love him. Honestly.
I wish we had him like 10 years ago.
I know. I didn't appreciate how good he was. Because I didn't watch Inter and I didn't watch PSG every week, you just don't know until you see them in the Champions League. And then again, you watch them for what, 4 or 5 games if you can.
Yeah.
But I just honestly...
Yeah,
one of the best.
And he loves us too. That's nice thing.
He's the last one to go in after a game. He's always there, like singing along. And honestly, that man is I absolutely love him.
Give him a coaching job when he plays it.
Yeah, literally, just anything. I want him for another 2 or 3 more years, please. I don't want him to go after next season because he'll still be that good then. Like we mentioned, we've got a winter break coming up, which is so nice for Chelsea because we played the most games by a country mile. Our team is tired. We do look tired, so it'll be nice to give those players a rest. Going into the second half of the season, Krish, we've got still in a lot of competitions. We've got a League Cup final to come. We've got the Club World Cup to come. We're in the last stage of the Champions League, so the FA Cup. We're not in a title race. I was going to be like, maybe we are, but no, we're not. But what are your expectations for the second half of the season? What would, now in the position we're in, what would be a good, successful season for Chelsea, do you think?
Yeah, so I think, first and foremost, I think as long as we've kind of overcome this bumpy patch of form, if we can continue to play like we did against Tottenham, just consolidating third and putting pressure on Liverpool for second, I think, is realistic. I don't see us dropping out of the top four. We're in a cup final already. I think we have a decent chance there. Obviously, Liverpool will be tough, but I would say...
I actually prefer playing against them. I think we've got a better chance of beating Liverpool than we do Man City, even though we beat Man City on the biggest game of their club's history. Like when I, but I still, for any reason, I go into a game with Liverpool thinking we can win this.
And even, and they beat Arsenal, obviously, and Arsenal have been giving us problems in finals and semi-finals in recent years. So yeah. I agree. I'm not dreading it by any stretch of imagination, but that's a great chance for a trophy. Obviously, Club World Cup before that is a huge chance for a trophy. Obviously, it's less significant perhaps, but still, like, in terms of Tuchel's record,
will become the best club in the world.
Yeah, exactly. As and for Chelsea as a whole, winning what I think it's considered a major trophy, isn't it? And then I would never bet against us getting to the last stages of the FA Cup. And this season, the Champions League, like, I think you can't ask for everything, but like after last season, yeah, just as good a go at defending it as we can possibly have. And I don't think that's beyond us, especially with the last 16 draw we had, really.
100%. I would echo everything you said there. I really want to go on a nice long run in the Champions League again. Because I honestly look at it and I think, you know, Man City, Liverpool, Bayern, PSG maybe, but PSG just seem to bottle it in the Champions League. But those four teams that are alongside us, you know, in a knockout, Chelsea are in knockouts. We love knockout games. Like, I would bet against us in knockout games. I just would. But I'd still like to, I think we've got to come away with one trophy, the top four, two, including the Club World Cup, which I will be out. I'm so excited to head off to Abu Dhabi. A little bit of winter sun, so I don't look this pale, is going to be great. And just quickly before I go, Chris, today marks 1 year since Thomas Tuchel took over the club. What an I literally just got goosebumps saying that. What an incredible year it's been. Intrigued, maybe a little bit apprehensive about what it was going to be like when he came in. But I think now I can sit there. At the time, I was a little bit sad about it and just wasn't sure if it was the right decision to let Frank go. A year later, I can obviously see that it was definitely the right decision at the time. He has exceeded every bit of my expectations, and he gave me genuinely the best day of my life in Porto on the 29th of May last year. So, I am just for one praying for many more years and many more trophies under him. And hopefully he can turn Chelsea into, you know, what Klopp has done with Liverpool and Pep has done with Man City. But try and sum it up for us now. What has Thomas Tuchel's first year in charge of the club been like?
Yeah. Again, I'm going to echo you now. Yeah, everything basically. But as you say, completely unexpected, pretty transformative, and at a time where the club was going through a difficult spell, obviously letting go of a club legend as we did, which is obviously not the first time that's happened to us, but obviously Lampard is particularly close to everyone's hearts. But it feels like such a good fit. I'm the same as you. I was intrigued, not convinced, didn't think it would last long. I mean, it's still liable not to last long. It is Chelsea after all, but he, at the moment, feels like the absolute perfect man for the job. And I think he feels that way about the club too. So it's just a matter of, he's proven what he can do. I think just give him what he needs, what he wants, the tools that he needs to achieve. And I think the club have sort of done that so far, obviously with Lukaku in the summer. Just need to get him scoring goals. But it's all... If away from all the noise, we're in a good place. I think, as we said, as good as we expected this season, coming from a team that was scraping to finish fourth last season, we're right up there. This team will have gelled more in the coming weeks and months. And I think, actually, the title race now being off the cards takes away a massive distraction for us, as long as we're not dropping a stupid amount of points, but we can have a really good run in the other competitions. Overall, he has... just brought a real... He feels like the perfect man for the job, basically, and hopefully that continues for a long time.
Well said, Chris. Right, that's it. It's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for listening. Chris, thank you very much. If you could drop us a review, it would be very much appreciated. Subscribe if you haven't already, and if you've enjoyed what you heard. There's a little bit of a break now, but don't worry. We will be back very soon here on Wherever You May Be.